The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
It's an exciting time to be a hockey fan. Some exciting games and outstanding action going on the ice all across the National Hockey League. And Drew, you are in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, back in the Paris of the Prairies. What's the vibe like up there?
Well, as usual in Canada, if a Canadian team is still in the playoffs in the second round, they become Canada's team. And so everybody's talking about and cheering for, well, not everybody, the Montreal Canadiens. But that's the way it is in Canada because they have this inferiority complex that the Cup hasn't been here since the Montreal Canadiens won it last in
1992-93 was the year Montreal Canadiens last won.
Yeah, so the last time a Canadian team won a Stanley Cup was that. And so Canada is now going for the Montreal Canadiens, but it's not like it was with the Oilers when they were making the run, or even when the Calgary Flames made the run years ago against Tampa. This is new because it's tough for some people to cheer for the Canadiens.
Well, I would imagine so. Like, for instance, people in Toronto or Ottawa, although Ottawa has always had a smattering of Canadiens fans. But what about out west? I know that in Saskatchewan, there's a strong French-Canadian population that always used to root for the Canadiens. Isn't that true still?
Still there. There's a rink that that's not very far from my place here that has a Montreal Canadiens fan club. Their dressing room, they were allowed to have a dressing room, and they've redone it in the Canadiens dressing room style, the old style. It's got the sayings up on the board. It's got the players up on the painted on the walls. It's absolutely incredible, Danny, the work that these people have put into it. But in Saskatchewan, there's a good Canadian contingent.
And of course, in Toronto, believe it or not, the junior team that Tyler Toffoli played for, actually it was more the midget or youth team, was the Toronto Junior Canadiens, which is rather unusual for the city of Toronto, don't you think?
Oh. Exactly. But
anybody who's watched the movie The Sweater will understand exactly what that's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's still, you know what, there's for a lot of Canadian fans, and there's still hope. I asked the question last year when the Oilers were in the finals against Florida, and I was on a radio show here, and I asked the question to the host because they were going and all that. And I said, let me ask you a question, just out of curiosity. If the Florida Panthers were made up of nothing but Canadians and the Oilers were made up of nothing but Americans, would you cheer for the Panthers? And they said, no. They said, no, you have to. It's got to be a Canadian team winning the Cup.
Back when the Sharks were really in the mix for a Stanley Cup championship, oftentimes they'd be in the playoffs with the most Canadian-born players in their series, regardless of who they were playing. And so the question I asked people, and I remember this was against Vancouver, I said, well, if the Sharks win, would you root for the San Jose Sharks because they're Canada's team? And they said, absolutely not. It's really funny how that works.
Yeah, exactly. So the vibe is they're hoping, especially the way that Montreal is playing right now, they're hoping that the Canadiens can get to the Cup. But I don't know compared to who they're going to might face in the Eastern Conference Final.
Let's get to the Philadelphia Flyers series against the Carolina Hurricanes. This series is now over. 4-0. The Philadelphia Flyers have been defeated. And yet in defeat, their head coach, Rick Tocchet, certainly had a lot of good things to say about his team. And here are a couple of thoughts that he had as the series came to a close.
I think it's amazing. Like, I really wanted to thank the fans for that. That was awesome for them to cheer us and the yell go Flyers and stuff. That, you know, maybe, you know, it puts us on the map a little bit. You know, I was just talking to Jonesy. He was saying, man, that was awesome to hear the fans cheer the guys on. So that's a good thing for the guys to understand this summer. You know, we get this fans behind and we get this organization back on the map, and we got a taste, right? Now what it's going to take. But yeah, I'm really, really like to thank the fans for that. That was really, That was wonderful.
Rick Tocchet talking about the Let's Go Flyers chants that emanated from the building in Philadelphia as the handshake line ended up getting concluded. And the Flyers all assembled at center ice and had a big, big cheer for the fans. And the fans cheered right back during the entire handshake line. Again, this is something that each team that has a long-suffering fan base goes through when they get back to the playoffs for the first time. And Philadelphia did a good job.
They really did. It was really interesting, too, in the handshake line where Rod Brind'Amour and Rick Tocchet, former teammates, had a conversation. It looked like Rod was mentioning that, saying, hey, this is what you've done. You've brought them back. And really, when you look at, you know, I thought about it and I immediately compared it to the Sharks and what Ryan Warsawski said to the guys at the end of the year in Winnipeg, which was, hey, we brought the Sharks back to respectability in the National Hockey League. That's what this team did, this team that we just had. He said, it won't be together again, but you guys all had a part in bringing respectability back to the Sharks in the NHL throughout the league. And hopefully next year we get to a point where we're in the playoffs and we're experiencing that thrill of getting to that position where we're in the playoffs and the fans are all there with us.
Well, it is that playoff experience that turns the unrefined coal into a diamond. It really is an exciting time. And Sean Couturier has been kind of dying to get back into the playoffs as the captain of the Philadelphia Flyers. And he's somebody also who has had a lot of pressure from those long-suffering Flyer fans who can be as tough as any in the NHL. In fact, they were jeering him in the beginning of the season. But by the end of the year, when he found a role that would work for him, for Rick Tocchet, he was playing very well. And Couturier told the media after the series was over that he's glad to see that things are pointed in the right direction.
Right now it's hard to judge or, you know, comment on the season in general. It's tough pill to swallow right now. I mean, we really believe that, you know, we had a chance and, yeah, it's tough right now. But, you know, at the same time, I'm proud of the way this team kind of battled to the end. There's no quit. And, you know, for a young team like us, it's a great experience.
Rick Tocchet, the coach of the Flyers, was also pretty proud of his captain.
Well, I think a lot of people, a lot of guys in that room kind of won it back, and Coots was one of those guys. I mean, yeah, I mean, we all took our heat, and he, you know, he got punched in the mouth early, and he, like, you know what I mean? And, he played excellent for us down the stretch. I think it's going to even make him hungrier. I think he's going to do, like, this summer, I think Coots, I don't know, I can feel it that he's already talking about how I'm going to, you know, come back even stronger. And that's what you want to hear from your captain.
Rick Tocchet talking about his captain, Sean Couturier. Flyers got a lot of exciting things that happened, including some young players like Alex Bump and Porter Martone. Really good postseasons. Matvei Michkov was in and out, but he continues his development. And Drew, I think, we're talking a lot about the Flyers here at this part of the broadcast, but I think you have to, because if you look ahead to where the Sharks are going to go, San Jose is going to have development like this, perhaps, and you can expect that.
Well, you have to. Right. I mean, that's the one thing when we continue to talk about what Mike Greer has been able to accomplish with the Sharks so far. And I underline so far, he took over a franchise that was rated one of the lowest franchises as far as development prospects and drafting ability and what the Sharks had in the pipeline to now, since Mike has taken over, one of the best in the league. And we know from the young players that have come up and done very, very well when they've got the call up. And the players on the CUDA and the draft choices that the Sharks have still playing in either college or in the Canadian Hockey League, that there is a lot of young, very talented prospects. And, you know, prospects are just that. There's a lot that goes into being an NHL hockey player, but the Sharks have a really great foundation right now built up to be in a position where we are talking about where they were to where they're going, where they are. And hopefully most of them are in teal at that time.
Meanwhile, Carolina is 8-0 in the playoffs. Huh. First time that's ever happened since it went to four sets of best-of-seven series. The all-time record is 9 straight wins from the start of a playoff, held by the Edmonton Oilers back when the first round was a best-of-5 series. That's how long ago it's been. Rod Brind'Amour, however, proud of his team after going 8-0, says there's another level the club has to get to.
Well, they understand there is, and there's going to need to be. We get to that next stage or whoever we're playing, and I think guys, one of the things again about this group, they're an honest group. They can assess their game and their team game, and they even though we won, they know that we got to get a little better.
Rod Brindamore's attitude is just incredible. It's almost like he's still playing and still working out five times a week, and something tells me that he still is.
Well, from what I'm told, he still works out every day. He's actually in the room before anybody doing what he does. But Rod Brindamore is, well, we've talked about Rod a lot and the way that he handles his team and how he has got everybody on the same page as far as it's about the team before the individual. And again, I'll say this about Carolina. They are a fantastic team, the team we hardly ever talk about. But you look at what they did this year as far as points. They were fantastic, over 100-point team. But if you want to point to one guy, and looking at the Carolina Hurricanes and how going into a culture and going into a team that is team first, look at Taylor Hall. Number one draft choice way back with the Edmonton Oilers was Taylor or Tyler. Got traded from the Oilers to New Jersey and then moved around after that. He has always been a very good player, but I've never seen him this committed to playing the game 200 feet. And he is, I think he still leads Carolina in points. He's physical. He's a changed player. Not that he was a bad player before, but now he is a more complete player. And it's funny how that happens when everybody goes into Carolina.
It is interesting that they adjust their game to the way that the Hurricanes play rather than the teams adjusting to the way that they play, which often happens with top-level players. And Taylor Hall's first overall draft pick, former Hart Trophy winner, is definitely one of those guys, certainly in the back nine, perhaps, of his NHL career, but or maybe at least in the throes of his prime, back nine.
Yeah.
But still, he's got eight games, 3 goals, 9 assists, 12 points in 8 games, does lead this team in scoring. And of course, he's getting a lot of energy from people like Jackson Blake and Logan Stankoven too, and that helps.
Yeah, exactly. And boy, are those two players or what? Jackson Blake is kind of a fresh look for me. I didn't really notice Jackson Blake throughout the year. I watch as many games as I can, of course, as you and I both do. But boy, in the playoffs, he has really taken off. And Stankoven. We always liked Stankoven when he was playing against the Sharks, playing for Dallas. He always loved his game, how much energy he has, and how, as a not a very big guy, he still plays inside. But that line has been driving the Hurricanes.
Absolutely. And of course, all these teams have bumps and bruises, and the Flyers talked about a couple of those injuries. The fight through that is something you have to deal with, too. Another thing to think about, Drew, is how hard the Stanley Cup is to win.
Ron Wilson always said it. Former Sharks coach always said, it's hard to win. It's hard to win in the NHL. And Ron took a team with the when he was in Washington and went to the finals against the Detroit Red Wings. It's hard to win in the NHL when you've got to suffer through so much. They came out today that Owen Tippett had internal bleeding. So that's why he wasn't in some of the games. So these are guys like Nathan MacKinnon, by the time we're recording this, took a puck in the face, came back and scored an empty netter in the third, late in the third. I mean, this is what happens in the NHL playoffs. We saw it with San Jose in 93-94 when Sergei Makarov was taken freezing in his foot because he had a broken foot or broken ankle, I think it was. He took a shot off, broken foot, took a shot off it. And every game he kept taking the freezing till game seven where he went, no more. I can't feel, no more. So that's what they do in order to play.
This is crazy. So this is a sign of impending senility, I think. I remember that play exactly where he got injured.
Don't lie.
It was against Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was Kevin Stevens
who
took the shot. And yet I don't know what happened in game 78 of this season. I don't know what's going on.
That's what happens to us, buddy. We remember the old days. Now we don't remember what happened yesterday.
Well, certainly the Flyers will remember this season, but so will the Hurricanes. They're 8-0, and the big thing now is that they have a little bit of a gap between now. 11 days between now and game one of the conference final. And so how will they handle it? Here's how Rod Brindamore looks at it.
It's a good thing because we're going to be one of four teams left. And so whoever, how long we got to rest or be off, we'll do it. I think the good part is, We just literally had the exact same thing, and we had a plan, and clearly it was okay, so we can follow that and run with it.
We continue now with the Stanley Cup Playoff Report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We flip from east to west and get to the Colorado Avalanche series against the Minnesota Wild. What a critical game number four at Grand Casino Arena in St. Paul. A little bit back and forth. It started off really well for the Minnesota Wild, and Danila Yurov put them in front 1-0.
Faber keeps the line. Brock Faber across the blue line. Faber able to find some help in Tarasenko. Back to Faber, a one-timer. He scores!
They got off to a great start on that play. Danila Yurov, his first playoff goal from Brock Faber and Vladimir Tarasenko. 1-0 Minnesota, but then coming right back the other way on the power play was Nazem Kadri.
Control power play, faceoff is won. Rebound, they score! Right off the hop, the Kadri man can. It's a power play goal. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, this is a tie hockey game for Kadri. He has a 5-game point streak, and he's tied it here in the second period at 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, it's a tie hockey game. That's Connor McGahey, our good friend, calling the action. Nazem Kadri is a thorn in the side of everybody, it seems, isn't he?
Absolutely, everybody. It was a brilliant move getting Nazem Kadri to come back to the Colorado Avalanche at the trade deadline. He has proved to be great dividends. It was really interesting. They put a stat up yesterday on Hockey Night here that how quickly the goals have been scored, in response goals have been scored within 30 seconds of each other, a minute of each other, 2 minutes and 21 seconds of each other. The whole series, it's been like that, where it's been they score, you score. They score, you score. It's been wild that way.
The one thing about this game, though, with the score 1-1, it was they score, they score again. In this particular case, Colorado would score twice in a row, and it would be Ross Colton that would get them ahead.
Nicholas Waugh now, all the way through for Devon Taves. Changed the direction of the puck just enough. Now he gets it back to the point, kicks it to his stick shot, tip. Brought down by Waugh. Backdoor feed, they score! That was Rossum! It's his first goal of the postseason, and Ross Colton on a beautiful feed from Nicholas Waugh has the Avalanche's first lead in this building in this series. It's 2-1 Colorado with 13:04 to go.
Really great goal. What a pass by Nicholas Waugh. Really, really well seen and delivered.
Yeah, you got to get to that quiet ice, right? So Colton slides to that quiet ice and play made in the corner. And a terrific pass, as you said, by Waugh. And that's another guy. That's another guy who's made a big impact in this playoff so far.
So that was the third period. Colorado coming right out and getting the lead. And then Nico Sturm would get his very first goal to the playoffs, and it was a beauty.
Sturm down low, around the net of Blackwood with a wraparound right through the blue paint. Nobody there for Minnesota. Hits gathered by Hughes. Up near the blue line. Seven down low. They score!
Kind of a simple way to finish that off for Nico Sturm, but I want to credit Quinn Hughes because he had the puck on the left wing point, and he could have banked it off the boards to go down low to the corner like so many players do. But because he's so skilled and he's so good on his skates, he was able to spin off, and Nico Sturm had the presence of mind to see that happening, and then he came off the boards there on the right side, Drew, and put himself in position to get the pass, and just a perfectly executed play by Quinn Hughes to get Nico the puck.
Yeah, but typical Nico Sturm. Nico makes the wraparound attempt. He gets taken out in the boards. He's down on the ice with Brock Nelson. He gets up quick, like right away. He hits the ice and gets back up. He hits to the open. He reads off of Quinn Hughes. So both guys make really good plays, but it's a typical Nico Sturm. I'm not quitting until the whistle goes. Terrific job by both of them. I was so happy to see Nico score, but didn't last long.
No, it didn't last long. It's they score, the other team scores. That's the way it was in this game. Parker Kelly would get what proved to be the game winner at 11:32.
Thanks, off at center ice. Won by Jack Drury for Brett Kulak. Off the boards, Gibby Ronta trying to get to it. No icing. Right in on Volstead. Bogosian with it. Turnover. Drury down low for Parker Kelly. Gibby Ronta knocks it away for Middleton. Drury works it loose. One-timer! Score! Go ahead and sell it! away. A one-timer from Edina beats Volstead, and the Avalanche have the lead back. It's 3-2 Colorado.
A one-timer from Edina. That's a good one, too.
Go ahead and sell it, Parker Kelly.
Hey,
he's got a bunch of them.
He's got a bunch of them, without question of a doubt, and we are entertained by it all. Again, Colorado coming right back, getting ahead, and then a couple of empty netters near the end, which happened. But also what happened is Nathan MacKinnon got bonked with a puck in the face. Here's the call.
There's nowhere to go with the puck. He forces a battle. He doesn't just throw the puck away, and then he takes the easy play out of...
Boy, this puck hits MacKinnon right in the face. This is a broken play that the puck came up and hit MacKinnon right in the face. Play is stopped in the Avalanche zone with 1:07 to go in the second period. And this is just a weird bouncing, almost field clearance by the Avalanche that catches MacKinnon up high, and he's bleeding from the nose.
Who was that, Drew? Devon Taves, who felt guilty about that one, trying to clear the puck and hit his teammate in the face. We've seen that before, too.
Yeah, they argued it should have been an icing. It wasn't called an icing. MacKinnon gets down low and he helps out. And then as the puck goes to the front of the net, Taves is getting pressure. MacKinnon comes out of the corner, almost skating directly. He was skating directly to Taves, and Taves gets it right up and hits him in the nose. He is leaking before he even hits the ice.
And so it had to be awfully, I guess you could say, exciting for Avalanche fans to have MacKinnon back on the ice and score this empty netter.
MacKinnon, pressure on Boldy, leaves it. Natchez reads it. Natchez, stick handling at center ice. Links up with MacKinnon, empty net. You betcha! The Mac attack is back, Jack! Goals in 5 straight games.
How about that? Nathan MacKinnon has goals in 5 straight games. Of course, it shouldn't surprise anyone. After all, he's a Hart Trophy finalist.
Danny, he's got one speed, that guy. He's just 100 miles an hour all the time. It's incredible to watch his work rate. He reminds me a lot of Macklin, or Macklin reminds me of him, and just continuing to work. I think Macklin's got a little bit smarter sometimes on timing, when to get to the space and when not to. MacKinnon just bulls his way into everything. But it shows you, again, what you were talking about. When you look at the National Hockey League playoffs, like I don't want to say anything about other sports, but I'm going to. The fact that certain other sports, a guy gets tightness in his knee, he's not going to play in a game 7 for crying out loud. You got Nathan MacKinnon taking a puck off the nose with 1 minute left in the period, gets some cotton shoved up there, and then he's back out in the third period. That's hockey. That's the NHL playoffs.
Well, he was leaking, too, during the course of the entire game.
Huge. Yeah, the whole game. They showed him at the end after he scored the empty netter. He still got blood coming out of his nose. That's a hockey player, man.
And so Colorado has a 3-1 lead. Everybody expected it would be tough for the Minnesota Wild, as good a season as they've had. But now the pressure is on, because they've got to go back through to Colorado and try to get a win in Denver to force game 6.
It's not like they played bad. It's not like if you're John Hines, you're sitting there, well, we just got to get more out of this guy and more out of that guy. And you want to probably get more scoring from your forwards, obviously. Without Eriksson Ek, though, I think that's big. They call Yurov. Yurov got the goal yesterday. They call him Little Ek, but he's not Joel Eriksson Ek. He's a big part missing. But overall, that team's played well. Their goaltenders played well. That series has been a hard series for the players. I mean, there's a lot of grinding for two really, really talented teams, but they need to get more scoring from up front, because Hughes and Faber are doing most of it.
We continue now with the Stanley Cup Playoff Report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Let us get right to the Vegas Golden Knights and the Anaheim Ducks. What a series and what a beginning for Beckett Seneca.
They outscored Utah in the first round on the penalty kill. They've outscored the Ducks in this round on the penalty kill. That shorthanded goal came last game. Here's Gauthier in the slot, set up by Killorn, and a kick save made by Hart. Seneca rips a one-timer from the top of the circle, and finally the Anaheim power play has broken through.
Beckett Seneca, one of the best rookies in the NHL. I've been impressed with him, Drew, since the first time we saw him.
He is a very impressive player. And this is what the Anaheim Ducks have been able to do. They have drafted well. They have developed well. Our good friends Jimmy Johnson and Brett Hedekin being a big part of their drafting, or their development. And Beckett Seneca, you saw how good he was in that Oilers series, and he's just continuing. And you look at the Anaheim Ducks, they have a lot of weapons up front who are young and they're fast and they're heavy. It's been very fun to watch this series too. This is a different series to watch as well. And this is a back and forth, but Beckett Seneca is one of the guys that we'll be talking about a lot in the future when the Sharks and the Ducks go against each other in the playoffs.
No doubt about that. And the Ducks also have gotten great coaching from their staff, but also they've been pretty smart in acquiring free agents like Mikael Granlund.
Through center, Zellweger joins the rush. He'll chip and chase, but Hanifin reverses it around the boards. Vielle pops it into the middle of the ice, and they score! Mikael Granlund drives right down the center lane. It's 2-1.
By the way, how about that, too? Jeff Vielle and Mikael Granlund, a couple of ex-Sharks coming through. They've had great playoffs, and they're going to be a big part of it. And then Ian Moore getting the game-winning goal.
Got a shot away, but off a leg, it's wide. Recovered in the far corner by Gauthier. Open right point, Ian Moore. Rolling puck, he scores! Ian Moore shot a rolling puck. It's 4-2.
Now, Ian Moore's been playing forward, but he's been back on defense with a couple of injuries, and so he's contributing. Finally, at the end of the game, it came close, and the end of a lengthy goalless drought for Tomas Hertl.
Theodore with Eichel coming out of the D-zone. Pass up the right wing, Marner. Gets a screen. Marner shoots. Score! Hertl! It's a one-goal game with 1:04 to play.
But that's how it would end, 4-3 Anaheim, and so the Ducks right in there at the Honda Center. I hate that foghorn when it goes off. It just drives me crazy because of the fact that it usually means something bad is happening to Sharks hockey. But horns for a lot of good reasons for Anaheim and nothing to do with the Sharks at all. But back to Tomas Hertl. He hadn't scored in a couple of months. I can't believe he hadn't had a goal in a couple of months. It's incredible.
29 games.
But now that he's got one, I've got a feeling he might explode.
Well, he better. That's his job. And he's 1-29. Danny, he's been invisible this series. He's been invisible in the playoffs. He was invisible for the last month of the season when you watch that team. I don't know what's going on with the guy, but only one goal in his last 29 games. And if the Vegas Golden Knights want to continue to move and continue to progress in the playoffs, he has to contribute.
Let's finish up with some thoughts about the Buffalo Sabres and the Montreal Canadiens. Wow, what a series it is. Canadiens are playing great hockey. Lindy Ruff talking about his team, saying they've got to get things better than they had in the last one.
You got to reset. You can't. Playoffs is about the next game. It's not about the past one. The only thing we can control now is game four. And I think game four, we've answered a lot of questions this year about, you know, tough situations and adversity early in the year. And, you know, even after our 10-game winning streak, a terrible game in Columbus. And, you know, we've put together 6-game winning streaks and 3-game. And I'm really confident in the group.
Drew, some final thoughts about that.
Well, Lindy Ruff is right as far as discipline goes, as far as their inability to play 5-on-5 hockey, and the fact that the Montreal Canadiens are a very good team. He warned them. He told them before the series started, you're going up against a really good hockey team, very skilled hockey team. What I like about Montreal Canadiens and Martin St. Louis, they play a very disciplined game. As far as they stick with disciplined, as far as their system, their identity, whatever you want to call it, they stick with it a lot. What we've seen from Montreal and the what we know about the Buffalo Sabres after playing them, especially late in the season, is the Buffalo Sabres like to get to the front of the net. They like to play heavy. They like to occupy the middle. And the Montreal Canadiens have not let them do that. Blocking shots, boxing out, doing all those heavy lifting things that there is to do. And this series, without a doubt, is on goaltending. Dobesh has been fantastic. He has been absolutely great, and he's been the center of controversy with Malenstein taking a run at him in the last game and getting a fine for it. So the intensity and the nastiness has picked up, but boy, oh boy, Buffalo, I think, has been surprised by the tenacity and the heaviness of the Montreal Canadiens, and that was Buffalo's game, as we saw when we played them the last month of the season.
Drew, I think we've got an amazing Stanley Cup playoff as we conclude the show today.
As usual, right? I mean, very seldom do the playoffs ever disappoint us, and it's been fun so far. It's been the story. Every series is a great story. Every series has some underlying current. Every series shows you that one play can matter, and that's been the fun of it.
And that's what we'll be reviewing on our show during the course of this Stanley Cup playoff run. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.